Okay, so we had left off yesterday. I had to kind of rush a little bit to just back up for a moment. We were dealing with a question that the Achronim got involved in, most prominently the Chiddush Harim, the Ger Rebbe, and others who responded to him, prominently the Murkatcher Rebbe, the Minchas Elazar. And the question was really prompted by a distinction that we find between Sukkah and Chametz, that if we work off the view of Rashi and the Rambam, that Bittul Chametz means you decide it's worthless to you, and you decide that you have no connection to it, why is that effective if it's Chametz that is, in the real world, valuable, and especially if it's not just a small amount, but let's say it's actually really valuable Chametz, which certainly could exist. So then other people will tell you that this is still quite chayvikayim. And to that we would say, but l'daito eitzol das bnei adam, that your attitude towards it is not relevant if the average person is going to contradict it. And we saw that in the context of Sukkah, that if one wants to take some fancy cushions and pillows and put them on the ground and consider them part of the ground and negate their existence for other purposes, it's very nice. So he's doing this in order to make the floor of his sukkah closer to the tzach. So it's nice that you want to do that, but the mice of the rest of the world will contradict you on it. And we'll have to take a poll and see what kind of accuracy we can get with the polls, and find if the rest of the world is going to agree that this is not a pillow anymore. So how come when it comes to Sukkah we have that issue and doesn't allow us to consider it bittul? And when it comes to Chametz, Rashi tells us and the Rambam tells us that deciding it's worthless makes it nothing. So the Chiddushei HaRim's main thrust was that the fact that it's going to become prohibited is the reason that the bittul is actually effective despite what otherwise may seem to be its enduring value. You don't have such a factor when it comes to sukkah. When it comes to sukkah, if you wanted to keep these pillows and cushions on your couch forever, they would be there forever. Chametz doesn't have the same story. Chametz is destined for destruction one way or another. And he notes that that's specifically true because the rabbis prohibited chametz she'avar lo achar ha-pesach. Hashem chametz she'avar lo achar ha-pesach. So if you're going to keep the chametz, and maybe you could have thought, well, why should I be mevatel this? I'm interested in eating it afterwards. But now that there's a din d'rabbanan that you won't be able to eat it afterwards. So indeed, this is going to be a genuine bittul. So that relies on the issur d'rabbanan to be there. And we started to say yesterday that it's also contingent on the Rambam's view, which may or may not be the Rambam's view, but the Rambam's view in one nusach, that chametz She'eno Yadua is where Bittul works, but not with Chametz that is Yadua. So therefore, the picture is, you have this Chametz that is not in front of you. You don't know if you have it at all, and would have to be destroyed. So if you did have it. So therefore, with a combination of all those factors, that's what makes Bittul effective. And he goes on to say that the first Mishnah, which tells us about Bedikas Chametz on that phase, and Rashi right away says it's because of Bayirah Bayimatze. So how does that work? Don't we have Bittul which should knock it down to not being Bayirah Bayimatze? So his suggestion basically is that if you assume that Bittul doesn't work for Chametz Yadua, and the question is, what's the standard for Chametz Yadua and Chametz She'eino Yadua? So maybe the whole notion of Chipush is that if you could find it by looking for it, then it's called Yadua. So to speak, you can't just decide to close your eyes and pretend it's not there. That if it's something you'd be able to find by looking for it, that's called yadua. So therefore, yes, bittul would not get down to a drabbanan, but you can only have bittul when you've had bidiko also. Because otherwise it's going to be chametz yadua. So far, so good? So one of the issues that was raised yesterday, I think Daniel raised it at the end, is there a circular component here that to say that it's only going to work as bittul because it's usser, but if it's usser, then bittul works, but bittul will then end up making it mutter. And then if it's mutter, then bittul's not going to work. So does that create a circularity? So that was one of the issues that was raised by the Minchas Elazar. The Minchas Elazar has a number of questions against the Chiddush Sheherim, and this is one of them. And he compares it to a situation that I asked you guys to look at this morning. The Tosfos discusses it, and other Rishonim discuss it in Bav Metzia, and also later on in Pesachim. And it comes from a whole different area of halacha. And the question is, let's say you have a Parah Aduma. You should be so lucky. It's the best investment. And it's spiritually and financially, you'd be quite lucky if you discovered a Parah Aduma. So you want to preserve it in its effective state. But the din is, it has to be asher lo ala la'ol, that it can't have work done with it. It can't be a beast of burden. And if you're going to use it for avoda, it's going to become disqualified. But there's also a condition that's only true if it was work that the owner was happy with, is nichale. So the Rishonim discuss, so isn't that always going to be your escape clause? Because who wants to have the paraduma disqualified? You don't want that. So if it's avoda that disqualifies it, but it's got to be avoda that you're happy about, and you're not happy about the disqualification, so then it's never going to actually be disqualified. And your head's going to explode. So doesn't that undo the whole concept? And that was what was discussed by the Rishonim there in Babasia, later in Sachem. So the Minchas Elazar brings that comparison here. That doesn't that kind of create an impossible situation? Now, parenthetically, just to look at that for a second. So there are basically two approaches to the Rishonim to that question. One is, the Ran also discusses this, and he says you basically can't have a situation like that where your head explodes, where sibas yisuro hetero, essentially, that the reason for its iser is also the reason for its heter, that it's simply a logical impossibility, and therefore you don't draw that conclusion. But also, some say it more simply, like Tosfos says, that no, when you have a standard in halacha like this, you look at it abstractly, not in terms of its halachic impact. So the question of avoda that is nichale, that is okay for the owner, means abstractly would it be okay for the owner? And you can't factor in, well, it would have been okay, but it's not okay because of its halachic impact. That's not the way we're looking at it. That's not the way that term is applied. So here, as I mentioned to some of the guys in Seder, I don't know if anyone came up with the answer, I mentioned to some of the guys that Parah Aduma is not something that's necessarily a part of your lives right now, I would imagine, without prying. And Bittul Chametz, okay, that comes up once a year. But this issue, these Tosfosin, this Parah Aduma question is actually invoked in an extremely practical, relevant, current Shaila. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Some guys had a head start in thinking about it, but other than that, there's been no clue. Akiva?
I mean, the big star is the horse here.
Okay, that's a little more hashkafic, but a very practical, technical halachic issue. So, essentially,
which specific din within Paradigma are you asking? That?
This idea that the malacha has to be malacha, that the avoda has to be that the owner is happy with, but if that's the case, that's going to undermine the whole concept because he's not happy about losing his Parah Aduma, so therefore that should itself mean he's not happy about it, and therefore it's not going to have that impact. Zach, you had a hand up?
Maybe it relates to the refrigerator
Shiloh. Oh, okay. Bingo, you're on the right track. So the refrigerator Shiloh, but also it's increasingly relevant even without refrigerators. It's also going to impact your ability to walk in the street on Shabbos, pretty much anywhere. Right, that we have a concern, which Zach mentioned refrigerators, so if you leave the bulb on in your fridge over Shabbos and you open the door, so you're going to end up turning on the light. And this is relevant then if you forget to take the bulb out of your fridge on a Friday, but it's much more relevant than that nowadays because it's increasingly common that there are lights that are triggered if you walk outside, you walk past somebody's house, there are cameras that are triggered. There are all kinds of electronic and electric devices that are going to be activated by your simply trying to get from point A to point B, which really is an increasingly challenging situation. So the question is, what you're dealing there is, what you're dealing with there is a psik ratio situation, that really you're not trying to turn on the light, but the other activity that you're going to do, which would otherwise be a permissible activity, is going to definitely lead to the light going on. We call it a psik ratio. So psik ratio sounds like it's really a full malacha, a little bit of a discussion, but let's assume that's a full malacha. So there's still a qualifier, though, that in order for it to be considered your responsibility, it has to be nichle. It has to be something that you are happy with. So here, is there room to say that it's lo nichole because you don't want to be mechalel Shabbos? So therefore, let me call it lo nichole. I don't want the light to go on because of my religious reasons, my religious commitment. Is that called lo nichole? Ellie, are you raising a hand? Is that what that means? Not sure what that icon means. Oh, I'm sorry, it's actually not you. Okay, my cursor had moved over your picture and it looked like a hand. Okay, sorry, take that back. Okay, so the Zoom continues to surprise you. So that question, these Rishonim and Bav Metzia and later in Pesachim are brought into this point that can you say that lo nichalei machmas iser? Right, the fact that you're unhappy about it just because of its religious implications. So can that be factored into lo nichalei? And therefore to say that it's not a psik ratio that you are responsible for. So this is a big discussion. Poskim, for the most part, have not accepted that idea of lo nichalei machmas iser, that the iser makes it lo nichalei. Basically, drawing on these Tosafot and these Rishonim and making a comparison that the same way you can't factor in the cow owner's desire to preserve the validity of his cow, so too we don't factor in your desire not to be mechal Shabbos. And so when you turn the light on by walking past the house, so we don't look at it as, are you happy the light went on now, Friday night, and it was a Shabbos issue? We ask, would you have been happy if it was Tuesday night? So Tuesday night, if you're walking down a dark street and the light goes on, you'd be happy to have that light protect you and guide you in that situation. A little synergy to our Levaya by Orchim discussion. You want the lit streets, synergy wherever we can get it. So that should make you happy. So therefore, it's considered nichale on Shabbos too. That's the general attitude Poskim has taken, comparing it to this issue. So you could basically use two of the views in Rishonim, either to say that it's logically impossible that Sibas Yisuro Hetero, that the reason that it's Usur is going to be the reason that it's Mutter, it's a logical impossibility. Or that just in general, we look at the Nichalei standard abstractly. And we look at it and we say that this is something you would have been happy about theoretically in isolation. And therefore it's called Nichalei, even if in this particular context you're not happy about it because of the Chil Shabbos issue. So this is an ongoing discussion because, again, it's going to become increasingly relevant and increasingly difficult to exist on Shabbos with all of these technological advances. So that's an ongoing discussion. As I mentioned, one of the most current and practical issues. So as much as, you know, you may not have thought how could a discussion about Paraduma has any impact, so you see that's a part of the beauty of Torah, that Kol HaTorah Kula Inyan Echad Hu, and that's why, takeaway for today, you have to learn Kol HaTorah Kula in order to address any issue, because you don't know what's going to be relevant to what, and here you're thinking, oh, Paraduma, what does that guy do with anything? And it's a key part of the discussion in one of the most practical contemporary issues. You could wonder if the comparison is perfect, and maybe it even goes in the other direction, that in the Shabbos Shaila, so you're unhappy about it at the time because of its spiritual impact. Because right now it will constitute an act of Chil Shabbos. Chil Shabbos is spiritually harmful to you, so therefore right now you don't want it. You want it and you don't want it. You maybe want the light, but you don't want the Chil Shabbos, so that could contradict itself. I would also throw in that this is not something that Poskim have supported at all, so don't run with this. But that, and Lamaisa, if someone were to ask you, do you want the light to go on or not, you say, I don't want it to go on. The scenarios in the Gemara where Sikresha is discussed could be that you really do want that result, and that's what Nichalei means, that if you have to vote in a two-choice election, for example, do you want it to happen or not happen? So you'd say you want it to happen, but in this case, you want it not to happen, because as much as the light is valuable, but you don't want the Chil Shabbos. But, okay, that's not the direction that the Poskim have taken it in. In the case of Paraduma, so the consequences afterwards, that you could be happy with the Malacha, but, okay, it's also going to have a separate impact that the Paraduma is going to be disqualified when you want to use it. So there's a sorrow to distinguish between those two cases. Not like the Chil Shabbos, where right now you don't want it to happen because of this reality of the Chil Shabbos right now. On the other hand, in the case of the Paraduma, it's a monetary consequence that happens separately, so maybe that's a different kind of impact. Okay, so it's an ongoing discussion how exactly to draw the comparison. But here, does it really knock out our Bitul Chametz issue? So to say that the Bitul Chametz is contingent on the fact that it's going to be Usur after Pesach, but it won't be Usur after Pesach because you did Bitul, so does that undermine it? So it sounds like that's where the Minchas Elazar is concerned. I actually have a sefer on the shelf, sefer called Mishpur Eyam, which, if you want to be happy to scan the page for you just so you can see, because this is a unique kind of sefer. The whole sefer is about these head-exploding situations, about, you know, scenarios in Lamdas or Halacha where the situation seems to go in circles, and whether or not that's a concern or where it's a concern. That's what the whole sefer is about. So it has a page about this Minchas Elazar. Is this really a concern that it's self-defeating, that it's like the picture of the flag with the snake that eats its tail, like it's gonna eat itself? Is that really an issue? So it's not really an issue. I mean, the Maisa, it's still Usur on Pesach, and that's going to be the key component. Now, it's true that the Chiddush Harim did say, but if it was mutter after Pesach without bittul, so then you wouldn't have a sincere bittul because you're going to want it after Pesach. But the maisa, once it would be usher after Pesach without bittul, so, and it is usher on Pesach, so that is still a reason to keep it in its negated state. And he points out in the Mishpura Yam, he says that also you have to say that because you have Taruvas Chametz. Taruvas Chametz is usher on Pesach, but it's not going to be subject to Chametz Sha'avar Lava Pesach. So it seems that being usher on Pesach is enough. Daniel.
But just, you know, this issue,
mm-hmm.
The refrigerator and the light case, it would really apply to any case of refrigeration you need to lay out Shabbos. You know, in any of those cases, you'll be able to say how whether, you know, you'll be able to find out that it was good or wasn't good for me.
So you're going back to that point. You're not necessarily addressing the Chametz point.
Yeah.
So that's part of why the Poskim haven't accepted it. So that basically it undermines the whole thing. So you'll never have a particular issue by definition, you know, which is kind of where the comparison is also to Paraduma, that by definition you have to say that it doesn't factor in the Chol Shabbos component because the whole concept wouldn't exist if it does factor it in. So if Chol Shabbos makes it not Nichalei, so then it's never Nichalei. So I just wonder, again, that something has no support in Poskim. But I wonder if there's still room to be mechalik, because it could be what the Gemara was saying, is that when it comes to Nichole, what we mean by that is we're worried that you actually want to kind of orchestrate that secondary result, because you really want it to happen.
Right.
So if, l'maisa, you really don't want it to happen, so then it's not Nichole. So even if your motive is spiritual, even if it's because of Chilul Shabbos, and that were it not for the Chilul Shabbos, you would have been okay with it, but still, l'maisa, you don't want it. So if let's say we have a scenario where every house now is going to have a light trigger and it's impossible for you to get home from shul because there's no way, so you'd be very unhappy about that. You would rather that the lights all stay off and you have a way to get home. So I'm not sure that it has to mean that the whole concept became meaningless. Is that what the Gemara was addressing, was that you could have, if somebody wants to orchestrate, subconsciously even, that, okay, I'll do action A, which is mutter, but I'll bring about action B, and I'm happy with action B, so then that's a concern. But you're really, mamish, not happy about action B, you're miserable about action B, and if it was in at all in your power to stop it from happening, you would. So then maybe that is different from what the Gemara is describing. But again, I don't want to represent that as a svar that Poskim have accepted at all. Take it a step further, Reb Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva where he talks about, you know, the malacha of kosher, that if you tie a knot on Shabbos, so we know that it's considered to be a prohibited knot, it's the kesher shel kayama. If it's a kesher that's tied and untied easily, and it's not going to last 24 hours, so then that's mutter on Shabbos, only a tie that's going to last for 24 hours or more. So he discusses there, what if you would have left it for more than 24 hours, but you're going to untie it specifically because you want to avoid the malacha of kosher. So do we look at it in the abstract, and do we say that, no, it doesn't matter what you're going to do, then you're motivated by Shmir Shabbos, it only matters what kind of a knot it is. So if it were a Tuesday, you would have left it like that for a week, so then that's the Kesher Shel Kayama on Shabbos too. And it doesn't matter that you would untie it to avoid the Melacha. We don't factor that in. So there's a discussion about whether that's comparable to this, and possibly room to Mechalik. Also, some of the Svarim point out, there's a whole world of relevance that happens to be lurking behind this tosis. So here, it seems to be reasonable to say that if it's usher over the course of Pesach, so then that's enough. And the fact that it's going to be mutter afterwards as a function of your bittul doesn't have to undermine that. And just also as a little bit of a preview to a future discussion, I think that's relevant to the whole Mechiras Chametz question that we'll talk about at a later opportunity. People are often worried and feel uncomfortable with Mecheres Chametz because they know they always end up getting their Chametz back after Pesach. So one question I'll just plant in your mind now for a future discussion. Does that have to bother us? Like when we say Tashbisu and when we say Bayirah Bayimatze and everything connected to avoiding Chametz on Pesach, is there any value in this being permanent, or is it enough for us that we are disconnected from the Chametz over the course of Pesach? Does it at all undermine our separation from Chametz after, on Pesach, the fact that the Chametz may come back into our lives after Pesach? So I think that's the question, just to think about how much of an issue that is or isn't. Because especially if we say Bayira Bayimatze is, like the Ran and other Rishonim maintain, just a way of keeping you from violating the Isser of owning Chametz on Pesach, of eating Chametz on Pesach. You can't own Chametz on Pesach, so you shouldn't come to eat it. So do we have to care at all what's going to happen after Pesach? Maybe the only zone that has to bother us is Pesach. And if the Isser is relevant over the course of Pesach, then that should be enough. Now, if that's true, so then maybe you don't need the whole Chidushei Harim's focus on the Isser Drabbanan of Chametz Shavalava Pesach. But you do, because his point is that I will want to keep it on Pesach so that I'll have it after Pesach. So if the only way I can do that, have it after Pesach, is to be mevatelit for the duration of Pesach, so then maybe that's good enough because at least it means that over the course of Pesach, I'm going to have to either destroy it or relate to it as nothing. So that seems to be essentially how it works for him. So the Menachos Elazar wasn't satisfied, and he took a whole different take, but we discussed yesterday it's really not as different as it sounds, and that according to Menachos Elazar, it's the Isser on you that is the factor, that since there is a Losa say here, that he is motivated by the prohibition of owning Chametz on Pesach, it's not comparable to the Mitzvah of Sukkah, which doesn't have that same pressure. You have to give up all your money not to violate a Losa say, so yes, you will give up all of your interest in the value of this Chametz for that reason. And he feels that is the operative point. I just put on the Markaros Gemara and Erevin, which we won't go into now for time, but you can look at it if you had a chance to see it. So he uses that to illustrate the comparison that there Hilchos Shabbos also, the Gemara assumes that there's a big motivation not to violate Shabbos that will negate monetary concerns. And he says here also, so therefore the avoidance of the Isser of Chametz is going to be enough to make this Bittul effective. And also that mark, if anybody's holding in Daf Yomi, so it was Daf Yomi last week. Almost synergistic for anybody who's behind in Daf Yomi. Perfect. So in any event, so that's the general machlokes, and we pointed out yesterday between the two of them that it's not really that difference, because they both say a common point, that according to Rashi and the Rambam, Bittul is about deciding that this is worthless to you. And the objection is, but the rest of the world will contradict you, so it's not worthless. But there's an extra factor here that makes you really committed to its worthlessness. It's just a question of what that factor is. The Hiddushi Arim is saying that the fact that it's going to be us or one way or another, and be destroyed one way or another. And the Menachos Elazar is saying the motivation on you to not violate the Nisr is what creates that extra push. But the commonality is there's something that pushes this into a more serious bittul, and it's not undermined by the fact that other people would say that it does have a value to it. Should mention one of the other issues, the Menachos Elazar, we're kind of summarizing and combining things, but the Menachos Elazar phrases his objection to the Chiddush Arim as four questions. Okay, Ari, were you able to find the Chiddush Erev? Did you look at it inside? You saw it, so I don't know if you're able to find it. If anyone's interested in seeing the Menachos Elazar inside, you can see the way he phrases his objections. But one of the points is actually discussed by the Chiddush Erev, but he doesn't acknowledge the point. One of his objections the Chiddush Erev anticipates says, what about timing, though? Shouldn't that become a big factor? That it would mean that Bitul Chametz has to happen during a very specific time frame. Because if you're doing this with enough time where I could still sell the Chametz and do business with it, so then what is making this worthless to me? I have a way to turn it into money and not have it be awesome. So how can Bitul work before a certain time frame? So Menachos Elazar raises this as an objection against the Chiddush Erev. The Chiddush Erev does mention this, though. He says he acknowledges that as an issue. And to the Menachos Elazar, it's a fatal objection, because he says, so Nasata Derech El Shirim, when exactly is the time when all of a sudden Bitul will work, that we no longer think that it has potential value to the seller? But the Chiddush Erev says that it's only going to work close to the time of the Isser. Now, that could mean that maybe it just kicks in then. Or it could mean, he doesn't spell it out exactly like this, but maybe that's the dual Bitul that we have nowadays. And the Gemara raises the question of why we do it at night after the Bedikah, and has an answer for that. But Lamaisa, we do it at night and at the time of the beer the next morning. So it could be that we need both, that we want to declare it when we have the opportunity right after the Bedika. But in order for it to really be valid, it has to be affirmed at the time when we no longer can benefit from it. So just at that moment, it could be that's the whole point, just a 1-2 punch of the Bitul actually being meaningful. So, and that's a point we'll come back to in a minute, because it'll also will address another issue, but just to try to fill in before we run out of time. So, these approaches, as we said, have this common element, the Menachos Elazar and the Chiddush Erev have this common element, and there are others who take a different approach. So, for example, the Chavinah Rosh Hashiva, his name is Rebaruch Shimon Schneerson, I forgot to say for Rebaruch Shimon. So he suggests that the answer, the difference between cushions and pillows in the sukkah and chametz is what it is that you are trying to accomplish. So if you're trying to avoid Bayira Bayimatse, so the Torah specifically uses what word here that might make all the difference. Any idea what word it's going to focus on? To give you a hint that it moves it away from being concerned with Das Kol Adam. Two-letter word that was repeated, well, sort of, in the name of last week's Parsha. Yes, Menachem?
Lecha?
Yes, Lecha. Right, Lecha. So the Torah tells us that the Isser is focused on how it connects to you. So that might be the crucial difference, that if you decide that it's worthless, so yeah, maybe that doesn't work by your pillows in the sukkah, because they have to be objectively not pillows anymore in order for it to become part of your sukkah floor. But here, the chametz, specifically the Isser, is defined as how it relates to you. So if you decide that it's worthless to you, maybe we are less concerned about Das Kol Adam. The fact that other people will contradict you is less significant in this area specifically, because the Torah identifies Lecha as the concern. Now, just to connect this for a second to the Ran. Right? So until now he's dealing with Rashi and the Rambam. But what about the Ran? The Ran in the beginning of the Masechta, where he discusses what Bitul is. You've all seen this Ran, right? So the Ran says, what does Bitul mean? And he raises the issues of Hefker and ultimately says that this is different because of the Gemara and the Avav, that Hametz is not really in your Rishos, and the Torah puts it in your Rishos kind of artificially. It's kind of pseudo-ownership to begin with. And that's why Bithel works. Now, there's a major ambiguity in the Ran, which we'll have to spend more time on tomorrow. So at the end of the day, is it Hefker or not, according to the Ran? That is it that Hefker shouldn't work, but because it's not really in your Rishus, so Hefker works with a lower standard? Or is it that it's not Hefker? It's something else. It's just a Giloy Das. It's just you're declaring that you're not interested in it. So the Chiddush Ha'arim says that what you see here is that a Giloy Das works, and Hefker really wouldn't work. And that take the part the Ran is saying about the Gilui Das and assume that it's not Hefker. Because what would Hefker do? Hefker would just transfer ownership to no one or to someone else, but the Hametz is still going to be just as much Hametz as it was before. So, therefore, it's not that Bittel falls short of Hefker, but Hefker isn't even what we're going for. Hefker would be a different kind of goal. And if you want to say, like Tosus says, that, well, like the Ritzvah says in Tosus, that normally you need three for Hefker, but that's only Midrabanan, and Minatorah you could be okay with doing it without three. But Minatorah, if you do it with only, if that's the standard, then you could end up having it right back in your own possession. If there's nobody else there to take it back from you, take it away from you. So all the concerns of Bali Rabbi Matze are still going to be there. You're going to end up with access to Hametz that you could end up eating or owning. So therefore, Hefker really is not at all what we're going for here. We're going for something different. And therefore, the Ran's description works, because to say that it's a Giloy Das, to say that you don't want it to be put into your possession. But it works if we're assuming that it's not about Hefker, it's about something else. So if you use that logic and don't call it Hefker, call it a Giloy Das, that's not coming from a Hefker consideration, then that's how it all could operate. Daniel?
Is in your possession, so even if it doesn't, even if you, you know, it's not a say that it doesn't belong to you, there's nobody else that it could belong to, and it could be that maybe that your house would be able to acquire it, to have the kinyan in that regard.
Sorry to cut you off, but yeah, I think that's actually his point, is that if we focus on kinyanim, right, if you focus on the dinei mamonos shebo, so then it's really not going to help you too much. Because you're going to get stuck one way or another, and it's not going to really address anything. So the real concerns about chametz are different, and they're not really tied to mamonos. And when the Gemara says, "Eino b'rishus lo shel adam," but the Torah puts it in your rishus, essentially that's what it means, that it's not about kinyanim and mamonos. It's about, for the purposes of this iser, it's enough for this version of your rishus, which is not about kinyanim. And the Ran is telling us that by deciding that you are not interested in it, that does enough to negate that component. So by declaring that this is not something you want to have any connection to, that offsets the Torah's association with you in the Chametz, which is different than kinyan. And it wouldn't work if it were focused on kinyanim, because it wouldn't meet the standards of Hefker.
Is Hefker in general revolving around
Kinyanim? Yeah, so it's actually a discussion in the Achronim, what is Hefker? Is Hefker a Kinyan or a Nether or something else? But when you ask whether it's a Kinyan or not, you really mean whether it involves giving it to another person or giving it to some kind of collective.
Making something Hefker, does that have anything to do with Sunnah? Meaning,
so on the surface, it should.
That makes it only kafir was just relinquishing my ownership.
Right, and there is a discussion. Yeah, so there is a, I'm going to talk quickly about it, running out of time, there is a discussion in the Achronim how exactly to classify, you call it a stilus, you call it a kinyan, but it relates to kinyanim in that essentially it's an unkinyan at the minimum, that you are being unkohen as something. Does it require you being maknit specifically to others or to the world or allowing that to be a possibility is where the details get a little bit more disputed, but it functions in the world of kinyanim. Not necessarily, because what we're seeing here is that it doesn't, Kiloy Das does not divest you of ownership.
So what does it do? It's just making
so,
it as if it's not?
Yeah, only because of this unique situation, that it wasn't something you technically owned in the first place.
So it is about owning. And
no, because if it's about owning, then had this kind of bitzel would not undo it. If the issue was technical ownership, then Hefker could release you from technical ownership. But then you have to follow all the rules of Hefker. It has to be spoken in front of three. But since the issue is not technical ownership, it's a more vague association between you and the Chameh, so you can disconnect yourself from that association with a Gilui Das. But for a Kenyan, they wouldn't work.
I'm kind of understanding it.
Well, it relies on the fact that it's not actually yours in the first place. Because if the issue of chametz, which all, you know, all makes sense, because it all connects to what Bayuah Bayimotzeh is about. Right? Do we really care that you have title to chametz? Is that the concern? And why? Why do we care about that? So if we go by the Tameh HaMitzvos that the Ran on the same page says that it's all to avoid eating chametz, so it's not about technical title. It's about access more, which is going to require permission to use it, and it's going to require physical access to a certain degree. So it's a different combination of factors. It's not exactly about ownership. It's about access, which requires that it be yours with accessibility, so it can't be somebody else's. Like, so if it's a non-Jew's chametz in your house, so it won't be bayimotzeh because you're not allowed to take it. So ownership is relevant, but it's not identical to ownership. So if it was about ownership, then I would need a kinyan or a hefker to get rid of it. And then we have a problem because bittul does not meet the threshold of hefker. So says the Ran, but it's okay because it doesn't have the same circumstances. You don't actually own it. You're just associated with it. So disassociate by declaring your das, that's enough. So what he's also adding here is that what the Hechid Sherim here is adding, it's less and more than Hefker. That it doesn't meet the threshold of Hefker, but also Hefker wouldn't really help because let's say you did have Hefker, but you'd end up with it again. Because you could be rezochet yourself. And you have all the same risks. So, therefore, in order to address the issue, you have to have a different kind of system here, and that's really what bittul is. So bittul is less than more than hefker.
Again, in what ways is bittul less than hefker?
Because if you wanted to be maskier your computer, and you just said, I consider my computer nothing, it still is something. It's still in your rishus. It's still not going to be any less yours than it was before. Now, parenthetically, and then we get into a controversial issue. So,
if somebody were to come and take my computer, then they would not be stealing anything?
They would be. If you were just mavatal it, they would be, because it's still yours.
I would still own it.
Right. Now you could be marichal on them stealing it, but because you don't seem to care about it. But that doesn't actually constitute hefker. So if it's so Tosa said, well, but Minatora you don't need three. But the Ran took that question a different direction and said it doesn't have to be hefker. or doesn't have to qualify as what would be Hefker. Now, what's ambiguous about the Ran is, does he mean that it is Hefker, but Hefker works with a lower standard because the ownership was diluted? Or does he mean, the way the Chiddush HaRim wants it to mean, that it's not even Hefker. It's Hefker is not what we're looking for. So that's going to be a nuanced issue that Achronim debate. Does he mean to say, at the end of the day, it's Hefker with lower standards? Or it's something other than Hefker? So here, the Chiddush HaRim is saying that for our purposes, we don't need it to be Hefker. Now, it's also relevant, the previous point, that there is a discussion in the Achronim that the Ran seems to have a little bit of a box on him here, because if it's all dependent on Chametz not being in your Rishus because of its Usser, so then it should only work when it's Usser and not before. And Chametz, we see, actually we'll have to discuss this tomorrow, Bitzel Chametz doesn't seem to work after the Zman of the Yisr. But according to the Ran's logic, it shouldn't work before the Zman of the Yisr either. So that seems to be a circular conundrum. So the Stipler talks about that in the Sefer HaMsachim. And the Stipler says that the fact that this Yisr coming soon is enough to trigger what the Ran is talking about. So that you just declare beforehand that you don't want it, and that will combine with its impending Isser. The Kajigal of Rav, and really the Chiddush HaRim is probably saying the same thing in less fancy language, but this is the kind of circle that works. We have some kind of circles in Halacha that create problems, like this whole Paraduma thing. But we also have a circle that works. For example, there's a concept, sorry that we're over time, there's a concept of how can anyone give his wife a get? Because if she needs to acquire the get, so anything she acquires will, during her marriage, is going to become her husband's property too. So how can the husband give his wife a get? It's going to come back to him. So the Gemara says, Gita viyada bayin ke'echad, that her yad, her hand, her independent hand to acquire property separate from her husband, comes at the exact moment that her get comes. So at that exact second, it's a miracle of physics, we're able to put them into the same second, just as she receives the get is when she also receives her independence to acquire something separate from her husband. So that's why it works. So the Kajik Lover says you have to assume there's something else happening here, that even whenever you recite the Bittul is not necessarily the point, but the Bittul takes effect at that exact moment that Chametz becomes Usser. And not before and not after. So the Isser right away triggers the Bittul. Even if you say the words earlier, but it happens at that exact moment. So that's the kind of circular situation that works. The two points depend on each other, but that's indeed how it happens. And that could also address Minchas Elazar's objection to the Chiddush HaRim, that Bittul can't work earlier, and how are you going to explain it? Okay, so it doesn't work earlier, but it means that you declare it when you declare it, but it actually kicks in at that time, and that's indeed how it happens. Now, we'll just mention one last point, and we'll let you go. But we'll have to move on to some of the other issues of Bittul tomorrow. But there's still one other part you can put together here, that maybe we've just put on the table enough to give another answer to the distinction between the cushions and chametz. Right? What else could we say to distinguish between the two of them? Right? So far we've said, well, we have the factor of the Isser that's motivating you, and the fact that you're not going to be able to use it anyway, and the fact of Lacha, but there's something else here we could put into the mix. Why don't we put in this idea of Eino Bershus Shel Adam, right? This fact that Chametz is uniquely disconnected from you, that's a big difference from the pillows and the cushions. So maybe we can rely on that. And that's essentially what the Ran is maybe telling us, that Bittul works uniquely by Chametz. Not really, you find Bittul in other Hezbollah also, but this case, this version of Bittul works uniquely by Chametz, because Chametz is not in Arashos. So that's one. So don't ask me questions about pillows and cushions. It's a unique din by Chametz that is dependent on this reality. And indeed, if you look at the Minchas Elazar, he writes that at the end of his Shuvah. He says that could also answer the Chiddush Arim's question. Okay, so a lot of stuff today, a lot of complicated stuff. Everyone follow? It makes sense, more or less? Yeah, you with me? It was a complicated Tuesday spot discussion. But, okay, so tomorrow we will try to get as much of the Bittul Torah done and to be prepared to move into our Chazar phase. It goes over a little bit, and we'll be okay with that also. It's just Pirurin, it'll be okay. And I wish you all a safe and healthy day. I wish the United States of America a safe and healthy future. We should all be zoche that whatever happens today, we should continue to be a nation of civility and peace and mutual respect and freedom and safety. And Omer, you need to make space for us all to visit you. Spent all week talking about Chanukah. Sorry?
To get here.
Yeah, I sure how to get there. So you know, we'll come back and hang out by you if we need to. Alright, so best wishes to everyone, and God willing, I will see you at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Have a great day.